Studies.
Okay, yeah, there you go. Hey.
Great, well, welcome to the Bible study. It's December the 9th, and we're here for the Northeast Bible study. And we're going to be looking at Leviticus 18 today, and then passage in Jeremiah and Isaiah. So what we're going to do, we'll start with reading the passage, then we'll try to break it down, see what's going on, the different parts, and then go into more detail and discussing some of the specific verses and issues. So yeah, let's get going. How about we all read it, two or three verses or whatever suits you, and try to get through the chapter.
18, the whole chapter?
Yes.
Adonai said to Moses, "Speak to Bnei Israel and say to them, I am Adonai your God. You are not to act as they do in the land of Egypt where you used to live, nor are you to act as they do in the land of Canaan where I am bringing you, nor are you to walk in their customs. You are to bear my ordinances and keep my statutes and walk in them. I am Adonai your God, so you are to keep my statutes and my ordinances. The one who does them will live by them. I am Adonai."
No man is to approach any close relative to have sexual intercourse with her. I am the Lord. You must not expose your father's nakedness by having sexual intercourse with your mother. She is your mother. You must not have an intercourse with her. You must not have sexual intercourse with your father's wife. She is your father's nakedness. You must not have sexual intercourse with your sister, whether she is your father's daughter or your mother's daughter. Whether she is born in the same household or born outside it, you must not have sexual intercourse with either of them. Let's see. I guess that's pretty much it. Verse 10.
You must not expose the nakedness of your son's daughter or your daughter's daughter, for it is your nakedness. Do not expose the nakedness of your father's wife's daughter, born to your father. She is your sister. Do not expose her. Do not expose the nakedness of your father's sister. Do not expose the nakedness of your mother's sister. She is your mother's nearest kin. Do not expose the nakedness of your father's brother. Do not lie with his wife. She is your aunt. Do not expose the nakedness of your daughter-in-law. She is your son's wife. Do not expose her. Do not expose the nakedness of your brother's wife. It is your brother's nakedness. Do not expose the nakedness of both the woman and her daughter. Either take her son's daughter or her daughter's daughter to expose her. They are blood relatives. It is incest.
18?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do not take your wife's sister as a rival wife and have sexual relations with her while your wife is living. Do not approach a woman to have sexual relations during the uncleanness of her monthly period. Do not have sexual relations with your neighbor's wife and defile yourself with her. Do not give any of your children to be sacrificed on Moloch, for you must not profane the name of your God. I am the Lord.
You shall not lie with a male as with a woman. It is an abomination. You shall not lie with any animal and so make yourself one with it. Neither shall any woman give yourself to an animal to lie with it. It is perversion. Do not make yourselves unclean by any of these things. For all these, the nations I am driving out before you have become unclean, and the land became unclean, so that I punished its iniquity, so the land belongs to the house of its inhabitants.
But you shall keep my statutes and my rules, and do none of these abominations, either the native or the stranger who sojourns among you. For the people of the land who went before you do all of these abominations, so that the land is become unclean. Lest the land vomit you out when you make it unclean, as it vomited out the nation that was before you.
For everyone who does any of these abominations, the person who does them shall be cut off from among their people. So keep my charge never to practice any of these abominable customs that were practiced before you, and never to make yourselves unclean by them. I am the Lord your God. Well, thank you all. We've got quite a passage going on here. So what are the parts of this, the whole chapter? What are the different themes and parts going on? You can see. I'll just write them down. Excuse me. So in the beginning, what is talked about in the opening?
You can't behave like the nations, where you're from or where you're going.
right? Uh-huh. So there's an exhortation in comparison, don't be like the nations. So that's, I think, verses 1 to 5?
Yeah. Yeah. Obey, therefore keep the law.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great, thank you. So that's verses 1 to 5. Then the next part.
What would you say is the next part?
Well, so there is the part of the actual specific commandments, and I think there we can separate them in two. Because there's two different, I think, types of commandments. So what would you say? So as Aaron said, Aaron suggested up to 18 or perhaps 17? Pardon? You said 18. Yeah, some people divide 17, some people 18. I'll take it up to 17. I'll explain why. So in verses, what have we got going?
It's basically incest in all its forms.
It's
basically
a reminder of who your family is.
That's
your mother,
yeah. I like this description. Right.
Yeah, she's your mother, she's your aunt.
She's your aunt.
It says she's your aunt.
Yeah, I know. So if you didn't know that, you know, that's the funny part.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, as it happens. Okay, so I'll put prohibition of incest.
So it's basically saying sex within the family in any context is wrong.
Yeah.
Right.
And it gives you all the different relatives. We'll discuss whether all of the relatives are listed or not all of them, and why that might be.
Well, it's both by blood and by marriage.
By marriage, that's right, yeah.
Great.
Both by blood and by marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So Abraham is damned, according to this.
Yeah.
Jacob's damned.
Yeah, all of the patriarchs. Well, not all of them.
Isaac, maybe all. Isaac, let's see. Is Isaac?
She was a relative, but probably
a cousin,
right? Not necessarily, I don't... She's a sister, or half-sister.
Laban is the brother of his mom, so that's the uncle's daughter.
So Rebecca would be her cousin, his cousin.
Is there a problem with the uncle's daughter here?
Because it's interesting, there's that Choka Yibum, you know, if your brother dies, you're supposed to marry your brother's wife,
mm-hmm.
so that she will have kids.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's after...
Mm-hmm. Here, you're not to, she has to die, not to marry your wife's sister, to be a rival, uncovering her nakedness while her sister's still alive.
No, for sure. But you would never, there wouldn't be a rule to say if your sister's husband died, you wouldn't take your sister.
Mm-hmm. I see what you're saying.
There is still a difference.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thanks for your comments. How about suggest that we get into all these detailed comments and the specific verses once we've got the big structure and then see where we're going with that. Thank you. There's always nothing better than good luck. So we've got the prohibition of incest, or as Sharon put it more euphemistically, family. Yeah, I like this.
An appropriate relationship.
Okay, I'll put it here.
So we'd say 17 or 18 to 21.
That's right.
Then it'd be
mm-hmm.
Seems more broad of you know, some sexual prohibitions, but also that are maybe connected to Avodah Zarah,
mm-hmm.
Idolatry.
Yeah, that's a good point. We'll get to that, the whole Molech thing and what that means and why it's here. So I'll put other sexual laws, maybe something like that, other prohibitions.
Mm-hmm.
So I take it up to 23, because verse 23 is the last one. And then there's the final exhortations. So I'll put it up to verse 23.
Up to 23.
Up to 23.
Yeah, I mean, it's however, whatever the categories by which you want to divide.
Yeah,
because I think it's the last specific law.
But then from 24 onwards, you've got the whole thing about defiling yourselves.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if we go back to what we've been doing for the last months, it's like becoming unholy, unclean in the sight of God.
Mm. And that's talked about again in the context of the other nations, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, that's right, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Don't define yourselves in any of these things, but in all these ways the nations were defiled, so they became unclean, the land becomes defiled, so I'll punish its iniquity, and the land will vomit out its inhabitants. It's very strong language.
It is, yeah. It's very vivid and very strong imagery. So how would you suggest, what would you suggest as a label, Gemma?
I'm not really good with labels. Don't become defiled, or sin defiles, or incest.
Defiles the land, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or defiles the land and the body.
Defiling the land.
Just defiling the land.
Well, your defilement is transferred to the land,
right,
as well.
Defiling.
And it builds up. It's like
something
that builds up.
Okay, I'll put...
It's a good example, of course, that the people and the land are always connected and are intrinsic in Scripture.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Sometimes we talk about the people, us, whatever, as one sort of body, and the Jews do this and the Jews do that, but in fact it's linked to the land, put it in common. It's pretty important in current terms.
It is, yeah. We'll get to that in the end. So why don't we start by talking a bit about the opening few verses? So we've got the initial exhortations, you know, don't do this, don't do that. What are the reasons given why the Israelites should act differently in the way? So what are the reasons that the Israelites are given in the opening to act differently, or to act as then is listed in the chapter?
First reason, he's the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Did you say that name?
Mm-hmm.
And then also that you live.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow it brings life to follow these rules.
What do you think that means?
I was going to turn it around and say, if you, whatever laws you follow, that's what you live by. So if you live by the laws of the pagan world, let's say, then that's how you're going to live. Whereas if you follow the laws of Adonai, the Lord, it doesn't actually say, you keep my statutes, but the one who does them will live by them.
Yeah.
So you're taking as living through them something that will shape you and form you in a given way.
Well, I guess one gives life and one gives death.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to choose. Choose life or choose death.
Mm-hmm. What was your take on it, Sharon? What were you going to say about, what do you think it means to live by them or live through them?
Well, it's part of that whole clause, which, you know, someone will do them and live.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it's kind of like a statement of these laws, when practiced,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also maybe in this specific case to the society as a whole, because these are rules supposed for a healthy functioning of a society.
Yeah.
So on a more, I suppose, practical level, you know, what incest causes, and
it's kind of defining this whole contract again.
Mm-hmm. It's a very strong language, isn't it? What does it remind you of, this kind of opening and exhortation, I am the Lord your God, and then... the Ten Commandments, yeah. I think.
Yeah.
Because I believe that in Leviticus, is every group of commandments open? I don't think every group of commandments is introduced in this way, I am the Lord your God.
Just the hard ones.
Yeah.
You know, like a reminder, if you don't do it, I'm the Lord your God.
So I think this really highlights the heaviness and the importance of these commandments. And maybe it's meant to hark you back to the Ten Commandments, you know, to the core of...
I was thinking I am the Lord your God. There's always a rider who brought you out of the land of Egypt, like his calling card. And here we've got the same thing. And you're coming out. This is when you come out of the land of Egypt or whatever land you come from,
mm-hmm.
or whether you're going into a land where it's just as pagan in a different way. There's a different culture,
mm.
I'm sure. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt with all that that means.
Mm.
So it's a huge statement, but it's linked in some way underneath to these verses.
Mm. But if I understand it correctly, you're also linking it to the Ten Commandments and God delivering people out of Egypt and taking them away from a society and calling them to live distinctly from that society also.
Right, because I think every time he says it, it's not just the Ten Commandments, where every time you read, I am the Lord your God, he always almost always has this rider,
mm-hmm.
I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the
mm-hmm.
land of Egypt, so whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So all I'm simply saying is here he's using it in the shorthand.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's a shorter phrase.
Yeah.
He's not saying, but that's exactly what it's linked to. I'm bringing you out of, he doesn't say out of Egypt.
No.
He says you're not back in the land where you used to live.
Mm-hmm.
It could be anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it does say they do in the land of Egypt.
It
does say
where
you used to live.
Or the land you're going.
Yeah, or the, yeah. It's either or. So don't live in the land where the culture does not have me as their eternal one,
mm.
as their God.
I like how you're connecting these two. I didn't think of it myself, but
now
I think
it's a brilliant moment. You know?
Yeah. I think it's very powerful. Good. Any other comments, observations, questions about the opening?
It's interesting, it starts with the family. You know, like when we ever think of sexual abuse, your mind first goes to that predator in a dark alley, a stranger, an anonymous stranger in a dark alley, but like statistically, the vast majority of sexual predation is a family member,
mm.
someone you know, someone close by, and like how do you instill it in someone from very early on that you can't even let your mind go there, and unless you have this idea that God will strike you, because there isn't anything here that sort of explains, you will cause long lasting psychological damage to the person. Obviously, predators don't care about that.
Mm.
They might care about God striking them dead.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that's a stronger form of exhortation, and they're saying God will punish you. It's not that this will have bad consequences for someone that you might not even care about.
But this is
so that
much more. There's so many more. Like when you think of sexual abuse, you think of older person, younger person, or child.
Mm.
This talks about.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's really sexual abuse.
No, it's much more.
No, but it's like where it says the getting a woman and her daughter. It'll simply a woman and her daughter.
Right.
You know how many people, like second husbands, they marry a woman with a daughter and then they abuse the daughter?
And
yeah.
Even abuse their own daughter.
It's just so terrible, right? But like that would be covered in this one.
Mm-hmm.
You're right, though. I mean, it's not.
But it's almost banning sexual behavior within the family.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Within the family, he's kind of defining, and I don't know which ones are left out, but
defining
within the family,
yes.
You are not to be involved sexually.
It's actually rather, there's a funny separation, because this is about sexual abuse, incest, whatever you want to call it, within the family, no matter how extended the relationships are. And it's different from your example of some dirty old man abusing, raping you in the street. And I think it's an important difference, because particularly now, as we live in a world now, if it feels good, come on, she's attractive, she this kid, my stepdaughter, she led me on, she was wearing too short a skirt or whatever it is. It feels good. And we're living in a, if it feels good to me, world. doesn't matter what it is. You can have sex with who you like, what you like, in any sort of relationship, as long as it feels good. And what God is saying, no, I am holy. And this is this whole institution of family. It's not marriage here, it's family.
Yeah, it's interesting. Mm-hmm. Marriage isn't even mentioned.
No, it's,
right.
It's the institution of family. And Lois brings it out very, very well in this new book, you know, Reading the Bible with Rabbi Jesus, about the whole concept. We run over all the begats. But the whole of Scripture is written in the context of family. And many people, particularly Jews, don't understand bodies coming out, sort of stories. We have the story of Abraham and we get the story of this.
They
very often don't, because they don't hear it. Because Christians tell it in an isolated way. They don't see it in the context of family.
They don't see the gospel in the context of family?
Very often not. There's a beautiful story of an Orthodox guy who gets given a New Testament, and he starts reading it in Matthew, and he suddenly says, my God, you know, this guy Jesus, he's a Jew. Hey, look at it, he comes from Abraham and Isaac and David and whoever it is, I can't remember what Matthew says, but it's the whole lineage and putting Scripture into this concept of family. And here you've got it in the most beautiful way, you know, value this family thing. Stop defiling yourself, the land, each other, whatever, by these abusive relationships. I don't know, I'm just talking off the top of my head, but it strikes me very strong.
Sure. I'm not even sure that other cultures, or even the Israelites, knew that some of these were certainly a defilement. I mean,
saying
just
that it's slightly.
Abraham and Sarah for me. Was Sarah his blood? Wasn't his blood sister?
Half sister.
She's a half sister. Yes.
She's a half sister.
And it specifically says not from your father's
or
daughter
your mother's,
or your
that's
daughter.
Right.
Either one.
Just in case, so that you don't find a loophole.
Yeah.
So
we're
saying this is a new rule.
In this business, why
are
they
yes. Okay. So shall we discuss one thing at once? Sorry, Aaron, you're going to say something. It's interesting. So you think people would have read the criticism of it as the criticism in between the lines as well?
Yeah.
the stories are presented. This is sometimes lost in how the stories are retold.
Yeah.
Both in churches and synagogues. But they're very human stories, and you can see both sides.
Mm-hmm.
You see
kind of motivation that's given is, Hashem. But I wonder what is also going through the writer's mind. Are they also thinking about psychological issues? Maybe thinking of psychology. Maybe thinking how this affects individuals. And are they thinking about family repercussions? And are they thinking about the whole civilization? Can a civilization based on regular relationships like this, can it work? What gets produced? And I suspect that it's very problematic. But I suspect it is also going on.
Yeah.
Not just was going on, it is going on. It still goes on. And I think Dan's point is very important, that we do contemplate, you know, abuse in the alley and being kind of that's the one that people get arrested, but actually the majority of it goes on in the family. So this is very, very appropriate.
Yeah, in fact, that addresses it in such.
This presumably is written. This is the law that was given after Genesis. So this is after Moses. I mean, Moses and onwards, so to speak. So in a way, it's like a summary of basic principles about how to maintain a family. I mean, all right, this gets messed up, and that got messed up, and they rivaled with each other. And there are all sorts of messes in the past which don't get aren't mentioned. There's no mention here of the past. Mm-hmm. But now, this is the law. This is the new Levitical law, if you like. So it's making it clear. So don't mess up again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think everybody had in the back of their minds, you could think about taking your brother's wife, that this is, you would think about the story.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering, remember Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, there aren't very many Jews, and it's don't marry the Philistines, don't marry the Moabites.
Right, well, it
and
wasn't.
So the married within the family.
Yeah, I mean.
Not
who did Adam and Eve's children marry?
600,000 or 400,000 or whatever. We're talking a big population group now, so, you know, there aren't just a few.
And Abraham specifically says, I don't want to marry a Canaanite, and so take it back to my family.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Esau goes off and does marry out, so to speak,
but,
the parents get really upset.
Right. But that's an interesting point, is what you're kind of asking, a question that follows from that, is that, you know, is God working, is God according to the historical circumstances of the time?
It's
is that what... Yeah. I mean, given the certain circumstances that it wasn't, if you didn't want to marry the Canaanites or someone, you would have to marry within the family, as it were. I mean, you could ask, is that the reason why the law comes late?
That's why it has to define so carefully who family is. Because did it mention cousin here? It didn't, right?
No, I don't think so.
Then cousin would be acceptable.
Yeah, which it probably would have been, right?
Right, an uncle with a...
Also, it doesn't... Yeah, actually, before we discuss the specific relations... Can we just briefly, you mentioned it, what's the Hebrew use for this? So it's been translated, what's been translated as sleeping with or having intercourse or whatever. What's the Hebrew term used for that?
For what?
That's right, for sleeping with someone.
Yeah.
So legalot erva, to uncover the nakedness.
And this uncovering nakedness, James thing is just...
It's a literal translation.
It's a literal...
That is the literal.
Yeah. So why do you think...
And it was a euphemism.
It was, but there are different euphemisms from what I understand. Why is this one specifically, do you think, used in this category of laws?
As opposed to what? Like, what are you referring to?
Like that? That's not...
Also a euphemism, but that's...
That's right.
Yeah, that's...
That's not necessarily...
That's less euphemistic.
Uh-huh. So what would be used
for
adultery?
No, less euphemistic.
It's just more, it's neutral, it's not a sin necessarily.
To uncover your nakedness is a little closer to the point, isn't it?
You're right, it is true that legalot erva has a ring of negative connotation to it.
What does it mean?
There's no way to
uncover
your
nakedness.
That's the old version. So, but what's the other quote euphemism for sex?
To know.
To know?
Oh, to know.
But that's
neutral.
His wife to
a child. Yeah, and the joke always is, you know, I never knew him publicly.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But you also have to lie.
You have
a
choice.
And then you.
Yeah, which is also really interesting.
And what was Ruth and Boaz? She was specific, or was
But the
it's what of course in English it's under his cloak or something. You know,
that chapter 3 is purposely dancing near the line.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's actually implying she slept with him. It's implying anybody else in this condition would have. Mm-hmm. And they didn't.
And even to lie with, I mean, you're just still not like being clinically accurate. I mean, it's kind of.
Yeah. That's why even in this passage.
But Ishgav
et sounds a little more direct. I know you could say et could
right.
mean with or direct object, right?
Because when I was a kid, the Ruth story, for years I understood it as that she laid down by his feet there.
Well, she did.
She did.
Right.
Yeah.
But you say
she
also
did.
That it's perfect.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
But now act it out with some person you've never met before and get a nice, beautiful woman to bathe and put on perfume and wait till he drinks some wine, lie down in the dark in a field where no one's watching.
Mm-hmm.
Now uncover his leg area and lie down, where there not be awkwardness.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's, it's asking you to feel tension.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so we were talking about the different terms, and what I was wondering about, what I wanted to ask, if legalot erva can actually have a specific connotation for a specific type of adultery or whether
incest.
Yeah, pardon?
It's
not always incest, but for example, some of the other passages it's using. There is one passage. Can you think of another passage? There is Ruth, which is with uncovering
Noah.
The legs. Noah.
Noah. Noah's the big one.
Yeah, Noah's the big one, but in Noah's there wasn't actually sex going on, I don't think.
You don't think so?
Oh, that's, but it is incestuous because it's his sons.
But, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, so
okay.
It's in story, I think it's all euphemistic.
Uh-huh.
But I think there's no way that it's not being implied.
Mm-hmm.
Because look, he gets cursed.
Yeah.
Why did Noah get so angry? Like, what actually happened?
Mm-hmm.
What, you just saw me naked? You're my son. They're both male. Like, what's the problem
yeah.
there? If there wasn't
mm-hmm.
any
mm-hmm.
connotation of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's still very implicit, is my point.
Implicit.
So that's the passage we're talking about is Genesis 9 to 22, 23, if you want to have a look. But there again, it's being very, very euphemistic, right?
Very
it's not even describing what happened.
Somebody explain to me what the word euphemistic means.
When you go around saying something that's uncomfortable to talk about.
Yeah.
So you hint at it, and you have an idiom so that you don't have to speak directly.
Mm-hmm.
Like instead of saying sex, you say, I slept with her.
Although that's still quite direct.
The uncovering the nakedness, or to know,
mm-hmm.
instead of saying.
Yeah, to know is a good example.
Having sexual relations.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or we were intimate instead of saying.
Mm-hmm. We had sex.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but in the Noah story, it's family again. And a lot of the... I don't think I've checked all of the usages of this expression, but quite in most of the cases, to the extent that I can tell, it's used in the context of family. So I wonder if it can mean... have to do with incest.
Where is that Noah
story? That's Genesis 9, 20-23.
Verse 21. Mm-hmm.
Would you like to read it? It's just four verses.
So he, like God,
mm-hmm.
he exposed himself
mm-hmm.
in his tent. What's it saying? Wait. Verse 20. When he drank some of the wine, he got drunk and uncovered himself inside his tent.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ham, the father of Canaan, saw his father's nakedness. Told his two brothers who were outside. Shem and Japheth took the garment and placed it on their shoulders, and they walked them backwards and covered up their father's nakedness. Their faces were turned the other way, so they did not see their father's nakedness.
What does it actually mean? Was he having an erection? I mean, what was going on? I mean, so what if a boy comes in and sees his father's...
Well,
that's the point.
That's what Sharon was saying. She was saying that it's more than just seeing someone's nakedness.
So what is it?
Well, if he got drunk,
but I'm trying to get
okay, so here's the thing. That you don't have the idiom legalot erva, right?
Mm-hmm.
But watch this. In verse 21, you have vayitgal,
mm-hmm.
which is the same root as legalot.
Yeah.
He exposes himself.
Mm-hmm.
The verse after, the guy sees his erva,
mm-hmm.
right?
you've just heard Lihit Galot, mm-hmm. and now you hear Erva, and you know, your mind starts to put them together.
That's true. Because Lihit Galot is the euphemism for having sex.
Yes. And, okay, so this is what the net Bible translation
is. But nobody was having sex with anybody. The boys weren't having sex. Wasn't a homosexual thing, was it?
Well,
that's what it seems to hint at.
I'm sorry, I'm so
it depends
right.
how
no,
you
thing.
Between the lines. Okay, so here for you, translation note. Some would translate had sexual relations with, arguing that Ham committed a homosexual act with his drunken father, for which he was cursed.
Where is the
this is a note from Net Bible. However, the expression "see nakedness" usually refers to observation of another's nakedness, not a sexual act, and it refers to Genesis 42:9. 12, where nakedness is used metaphorically to convey the idea of weakness or vulnerability. And then Deuteronomy 23:14, where nakedness refers to excrement.
Because I also remember as a kid, this when the King James was much more common, even Leviticus 18 being explained to me that way. You're just not supposed to see all of these people's nakedness.
Could be because you were a kid.
Right, no, right. That's it was just explained to me euphemistically. Just, you're not, all these people here, you're not supposed to see any of these people.
But I don't think that's euphemistic. Mm-hmm. That's not euphemism, because euphemism is still meaning something, but just hinting at it. Whereas this is just explaining it as if that was something else.
No, but nobody said, you know, people aren't supposed to have, none of these people are supposed to be having sex. They thought, this kid's too young to understand me that you're not supposed to see any of these people.
Okay.
Like, literally,
so,
just naked.
And there is that prohibition that you're not supposed, you know, that your mother needs to be at a certain age.
Right.
That is very uncomfortable for a boy or
a
girl with their father.
So in the rest of the translation, in Leviticus 20, verse 17, the expression "see nakedness" does appear to be a euphemism for sexual intercourse in Leviticus 20.
Mm-hmm.
But the context there, unlike that of Genesis 9:22, clearly indicates that in the passage, sexual contact is in view.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would say the context in Genesis 9 actually seems to me clearly to indicate that as well.
Because
mm-hmm.
That same awkwardness is going on. The writer is having, would have a really hard time if there was something.
Yeah,
going.
I think Sharon's point is, should be considered, but one thing I want to point out is that who is the other brother who comes in?
Shem.
Shem, huh?
So, in order to prevent it from being kind of
looking,
it actually does have to do with looking.
Sure. But what if looking was like a first step?
Yeah, sure.
To
I think in this case the euphemism is much more remote, and I think
much
it's
more between the
shame.
Yeah. Much more between the
So. What I was wondering is that I was suggesting that maybe it refers to, or in some sources, at some stages it referred to incest or was a euphemism for some kind of incest. And I think it's also interesting why that would be the case, because it's, so you're uncovering someone's nakedness, but if you look at verses, for example, let me just find the right one I was looking for. It's also saying... No, we're in Leviticus now. There's actually talking, you're uncovering your own nakedness because they're a blood relative to your... So I think I see a connection in that, because you're uncovering their nakedness, but because they're related to you, you're also uncovering your nakedness, meaning bringing shame on you. That's why I think maybe it has to do with family relations and can be taken in that sense. Good, so we're talking about the different family members that are involved. Just one quick thing that I've been curious about is I don't see sisters, like full sisters and brothers covered in this category. Why do you think, do you have any ideas why that is the case? It's talking about half-sisters, verse 9. Achotcha bat avicha. I think so. I think that would be my inclination. Because
it refers to she is your sister translating something that is not your ancestor. You're not supposed to be your
father. Not to uncover the nakedness of your sister.
Mm-hmm.
Verse 9.
Mm-hmm. Verse 9.
I've got. You have.
Yes, your sister, yeah, Bat, and then
the daughter of your father.
Yeah.
Or the daughter of your mother, whether born at home or elsewhere.
No, but since it specifies it, I think it means a half-sister. Otherwise, you'll just say sister.
Well, I think it's including. It's saying the law is sister, by the way, that includes all your half-sisters in any kind of situation you could imagine.
But you can read it that way. But I think if you go back to verse 6, which is the preamble or the general law, then I think that clearly covers full sisters and brothers. Yes.
Certainly a sister. Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the general law, and then you've got the specific, maybe the more specific cases that would have been more. Would it more?
Was that how laws always work? You give a law, and you're like, well, what about this case?
Yeah.
And so they have to be more and more specific. Mm-hmm.
So I think, you're right. I think that's how I would explain it. Good. I want us to move on a little bit for the sake of time and talk about the next section. So we've got the other more general prohibitions, so that's verses 18 to 23. Is there a particular law in this category that you find striking to be in that context? We've got
21.
Well,
I think so.
Law about not having intercourse with a woman having her period, and it's really interesting because that's one of the few things that's really kept in Orthodox Jewish society.
Judaism.
I mean, homosexuality and heaven knows what else is okay, but that's
right. But it still has to do with sexuality. Mm-hmm. If you look at verse 21, you shall not give any of your children to offer them to Molech, and to profane the name of your God.
No, but I'm simply saying what struck me was it struck me that in all this whole thing, verse 19 is the one thing that people are serious about now.
In terms of practice.
I mean, when we start talking about offering children to Molech, we're onto another whole.
Yeah, but
I don't think it's a separate category. Uh-huh.
Is it a separate category? Why is it included here?
If you were sleeping with a temple prostitute and the result was a child, and like that would be seen as giving your child to Molech.
Do you think?
Well,
giving your child to Molech was offering your child to this god Molech. He had an enormous great fire burning in his belly, sitting at the bottom of the Gihon Valley down there, and that's what you did.
Also it says Mizan Akha.
Yeah.
It's also using a metaphorical way to refer to a child.
Right, there's some kind of child and procreation language. I mean, it's clearly a sacrifice to Molech. You can understand it as being, you know, symbolizing other types of
sacrifice.
Yeah.
So.
And it says, to share his point, it says, Mizanachai, from your seed, don't give to Molech. So that also can be another euphemism. Don't have sex with a temple prostitute to Molech. It's not clear that this is a biblical for that. I mean, it could be. That's the translation.
But that isn't a very helpful translation. This isn't very helpful because we're talking about giving your
has a difference. Well, the translation is just making a point, making an assumption, and it's just not telling you.
Sounds more like offering your child to be burned alive.
Well,
I think so.
That's the case. I'm not. That may be the case, and they're making it very, very explicit.
But I think that's a safe enough assumption, you know, giving what is known about the practices, Molech worship. I think I would assume so.
Like Zera, okay, it can be your child and offspring. It could also just be Zera, just sperm.
Was that a practice that we know about?
No, but I'm just saying.
It could.
If you're going to think about it creatively. It's still within, like, if you start
That's for you.
You're literally giving up your seed. There's a potential child there.
But you're taking it that way to be able to connect these two themes.
I have no evidence.
I appreciate creativity in trying to bridge the gap. I mean,
but it is,
what we see
as
a gap.
Talking about sex in whatever form or whatever concept, and I think.
Yeah, do we have any evidence of this before?
That's what I was asking.
We haven't even found where they burn babies.
Really?
Here in Jerusalem, know Finney Deans did it.
Mm-hmm.
In,
well, I thought they did it
anywhere.
I don't have the evidence, but
in,
I always.
You know, I'm not good on the details. In Egypt, I think they found, you know, like little baby bones. It seems like a lot of little baby bones somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And we found little baby bones underneath grovels.
But I mean, that's not how you can sustain a society, by killing off the boys and having all the girls
to
be prostitutes.
It's just in the brothel.
Okay.
So
wow.
The prostitutes themselves can obviously get pregnant occasionally, and so if it's a girl, keep it. If it's a boy, drown it.
Like in China, you kill off the girls.
Yeah, same.
Wow. So, okay, we're discussing the details of that, but how do you still see, so do you see a connection between these two?
Yes.
We talked about it, Gemma, a little bit. Do you? I was interested in what you had to say. Do you want
well,
to share with us?
It seems to me that we haven't got to the after I yet, but the whole connection seems to be linked to I am your God.
Mm-hmm.
You're not to defile me. You're not to defile me sexually. You're not to go after the next verse. You're not to give your children to foreign gods. You're not to lie with a man. You're not to have homosexual relations. You're not to have bestial relations. The whole thing is talking about, I am your God, you have to stay pure and holy and my people for me. And not turn these practices, which may feel good at the time or whatever the culture presses, into some sort of idol. Because the connection seemed to me, when I was thinking about it before, was the fact that they are making gods of wood and stone and all the rest of it. I don't know, we haven't got there yet.
No, we haven't. So yes, let's go to Jeremiah. Before we go there, I'd like to make two observations about this.
Yeah.
And then we'll go to Jeremiah. I think the connection will become a bit clearer. So actually, you see in a lot of other passages, for a reference, I also found Ezekiel 16:36, which talks in one context about or God, you know, warning people or... for sin, which has to do with adultery and also child sacrifice or worship of idols.
Ezekiel
16:36.
Sexual thing with idolatry.
Yeah, I'm saying that it seems to be put together in other contexts, and which probably shows that there people saw some connection. And the connection that I can see is that in both cases you're harming someone who's your relative. I mean, it's either your child or you're sleeping with your grandmother or someone.
Right.
So by extension, you
I don't know if that was that mentioned.
I think so. Okay.
Highly tempting, but yeah.
Okay. And so you're sinning, you're harming someone who is a close relative, but by extension you're also harming yourself because they're a relative. And you, I mean, you're sacrificing your child or something like that. So I can see the connection as committing a very strong sin to someone who's close related to you and therefore also polluting yourself.
Can I read the verse of Ezekiel that you just given us?
Yes.
Because it's really powerful. Therefore, harlots, hear the word of Adonai. Thus says Adonai Elohim, because your filth was poured out and your nakedness exposed through your harlotry with your lovers, because of all your idols of abominations, and because of the blood of your children that you gave to them, therefore, behold, I will gather all your lovers, those loved and all them you have hated. I will gather together to you from every side. I will expose your nakedness to them, so they may all see your nakedness. So I will judge you as women who commit adultery and shed blood that are judged. And it goes on like that.
Mm. But you have
it
the...
It all gets linked together. But
you have both theirs.
Yeah.
And,
see,
and,
yeah.
And you're going to be adulterous.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
And it's interesting, this whole thing about leaving you naked.
Mm-hmm.
That's not to do with sex. That's to do with, as I see it, that's to do with leaving you unclothed, unprotected.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
so it's interesting because...
Can you look it up for me?
Well,
16...
Yeah, but it's interesting here because it's taken one step further. You having sexual relationships with someone, you uncover your nakedness, and by extension, the punishment for that is your own nakedness will be uncovered. So God is kind of taking that and the sin, yeah, which I think is, you know, taking the kind of one step further. Well, you can take this home and think about it, the connections more, because I find this verse quite interesting as well. But I suggest that in the time, in the 10 minutes left, we read the Haftarah and talk about further connections. So if you go to Jeremiah 10, verses 2 to 10, would someone like to read it for us, or half and half?
Jeremiah
10 what? 10, 2 to 10. Thank you.
Thus says the Lord, learn not the ways of the nations, nor be dismayed at the signs of the heavens, because the nations are dismayed. For the customs of the peoples are vanity. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A tree from the forest is cut down, the work of the gnats, by the hands of the craftsmen. They decorate it with silver and gold, they fasten it with hammer and nails, so that it cannot move. Their idols are like scarecrows in a cucumber field, and they cannot speak. They have to be carried, for they cannot walk. Not be afraid of them. They cannot do evil. Neither is it in them to do good. There is none like you, O Lord. You are great, and your name is great in might. Who would not fear you, O King of the nations? For this is your due. For among all the wise ones of the nations and in all of their kingdoms, there is none like you. They are both stupid and foolish. The instruction of idols is but wood. Beaten silver is brought from Tarshish. Gold from Euphrates. They are the work of the craftsmen and of the hands of the goldsmith. Their clothing is violet and purple. They are all the work of skilled men. But the Lord is the true God. He is the living God and the everlasting King. At his wrath, the earth quakes, and the nations cannot endure his indignation.
Thank you. Yeah. So what jumps out at you from this passage? What strikes you, and where do you see any connections?
Well, what struck me was that, going backwards really, verse 10, that Adonai Elohim is truth. He is the living God, the eternal King. At his wrath the earth quakes, and the nations cannot endure his indignation. And that verses you had from Ezekiel, which I've lost now, also has this word about the indignation of the Lord.
Mm.
When we go off and do our own thing, we destroy it.
But specifically not just do our own thing, but do the laws of the people around us.
Mm.
That's right.
Mm.
That's right.
Well, it doesn't mention Egyptians or Canaanites, but it mentions Goyim and Amim.
Right. And
it's
following the gods, the rules, the laws, the habits, the customs of others, the Goyim, the foreigner. Whereas God has said, this is my people, this is what I'm doing, these are my boundaries for good living, for good family, for good everything. And you follow me. He is the living and the eternal one. It's always to do with a relationship with God. Rather, we turn it round very often and see it just as God making innumerable laws and rules and regulations. But really what he's saying is he wants people to have a relationship with him. And by doing that, we have to go his way.
Mm. Yeah, it also reminds me of the verse, be holy because I am holy. You know, it's bringing
right.
it back. We talked about kind of the nitty-gritty, the legal stipulations, but now it brings it back. Why is all of this here in the first place? Because these is the Israelites, and we, by extension, are taught to live distinctly because we're to be like our God.
Sweeping those practices from Leviticus to the stupidity of a beaten silver.
Mm.
I mean, it's kind of like the other half. Look what you're doing. When you do this and you follow these customs, this is what you're signing up for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's right.
But it kind of reminds me of Paul when it says in verse 5, don't be afraid of them because like they can't hurt you and they can't do any good for you.
Mm-hmm.
They're nothing. Like what they represent is a nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I've got it like a scarecrow in a cucumber god. Their idols cannot speak. They must be carried because they cannot walk. Don't fear them. They can do no harm.
Mm.
I remember being in the south of Italy many, many, many years ago for the Feast of the Virgin on the 18th of August. And they took the Virgin out of the church and they paraded her with huge excitement.
You mean so Mary? You mean Mary?
Mary, yeah, the Virgin Mary. This huge, great statue of Virgin Mary. And, the kids were fighting over who was going to have the honour of carrying her. And they took her to the edge of the cliff so she could look at the sea. And then they did whatever they did, and they took her back to the church. That was the... And I... Anyway, they had to be carried. Don't fear me, they can do no harm.
There's this polemic, there's this obvious, like, well, look, it's so silly anyway, because human hands made these idols, whatever. But the power of the idol would only be as strong as the power of the God behind it.
Yeah, right.
Because you could say the same thing for the Ark of the Covenant. Human hands made that too.
Mm-hmm.
Human hands put gold over the wood,
right.
And, you know, according to stretches, whatever. But the power comes if there really is a God behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what gives it power and sanctity, nothing else.
And so also you're saying that the ancient... these peoples would have associated a particular deity or a god not with its statue but with the like natural element it represents. So for them it wouldn't, so in a sense this is kind of polemical, but it's not really addressing the root of, you know, the
what's polemical.
Yes, that's the kind of revolutionary principle behind this argument here, is because nations would always kind of argue that my god is better than your god, but here's Jeremiah saying that, and they wouldn't have put any stock in that idol per se. Nobody was actually praying to idols. They were praying to the god that the idol represented.
Right.
But Jeremiah is saying here that, but
however, they wouldn't believe that the god inhabited the idol.
Yeah,
like a portal.
And definitely having that idol there helped it. That physical presence of the idol helped whatever issue, going into war with it or just protecting the home and all that stuff. But Jeremiah is here saying that, no, not just is our god stronger than their god, their god doesn't exist.
Yeah.
That's the crazy thing. People didn't argue that way back then.
Yeah.
They didn't say...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think...
Nobody said, there is no other god but ours.
Right.
That was a crazy thing to say.
Well, you know, I just...
Yeah, but at the same time, I was just going to say the Ten Commandments.
Jeremiah
used to have no other god... No other gods but me.
Yeah.
So the implication is that there are other gods. He's the only god you ever have.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jews
are
keen on
saying
there's only one god.
There are, you might think there are other gods. If you're talking to someone who has that perspective.
Right, it's kind of talking to your cultural context. But
you know what I see the connection here? I see through the New Testament when Paul talks about our body as the temple of the Holy Spirit. And so what we do to our body is important because we're supposed to be pure and holy and to have that relationship. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
But he makes a connection. That's why you shouldn't go sleep with a prostitute, because how can you unite your member with you know, someone
something
who's not
a different spirit? Yeah.
Yeah,
I like that connection. I think
and then the other thing, sorry, the other connected thought is that we are also the idol of God.
Mm-hmm.
We are Senet, we're the image of God. And so part of the problem making that idol is wrong is because we're denying our role in creation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we were created to represent God. And so we shouldn't be shuffling off that responsibility somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And we were created to have a relationship with Him. And so, like, those two things kind of come together.
Yeah, that's right.
Ourselves being that, I don't know, the idol or
the image.
The one that's supposed to have the relationship.
Yeah.
Could somebody please tell me what the word polemic means?
Like
war.
War
of words.
War with
someone.
A what?
A verbal war.
Oh, really? Nice.
Mm. I like this point, and I think it's a good point to finish on because it gives us a bit broader perspective than all these laws, which we perhaps find a bit difficult to relate to. A bit culturally distant. So I think it's a good point to finish on, something to take home and think about, you know, how we are representing God in this world and how the fact that we're the temple of the Spirit and how that affects the way we live. I think that's a good point to take home and think about more. So thank you all for coming, and Shabbat Shalom.
Well done.